We are all, each of us, good at some things and bad at others. From the time I was young, I discovered that I was no good at foreign languages. I was worse than no good. My teacher of biblical grammar in rabbinical school started off by telling me that I just hadn't been properly taught and ended the semester by saying, "You know, I was wrong, you really are bad at this." I began college as a philosophy major, but you had to have German. So the first semester of my freshman year, I took German, and I sat in the class day after day, week after week, and by the time the final rolled around, the only thing that I could put on every answer was, "Ich bin ein Berliner." And therefore, I stand before you with my degree in English literature. That's just the reality. I'm missing the part of the brain that allows you to understand foreign languages, and if it weren't for the fact that I studied Hebrew from the time that I was a little kid, I don't think I'd have any grasp of that either. And yet I know that languages are not equivalent. And that if you don't speak a language, you miss a world. And you cannot understand a people if you do not understand their language. And not only can you not understand them, but you are bound in some ways to misinterpret them if the language is not your own. And a perfect example is the Ten Commandments. Hebrew has a perfectly good, serviceable word, one that is used over and over and over again for commandment. The word is mitzvah. But these are not called the Ten Mitzvot in the Bible. They're not called the Ten Commandments. They are called either Aseret HaDivarim or Aseret HaDibrot, which means the Ten Sayings. And this opens up the possibility of interpretation in a different way. What if they're not all commandments? Especially the first one. Anochi, Adonai Elohecha, Asher Tzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. That's counted as the first commandment. The second is, Lo yeh Elohim acherim al panai, you shouldn't have other gods in front of me, before me. In other words, the commandment against idolatry. But the first one doesn't have prescriptive language. It doesn't say you should, you shouldn't. It just says I'm God. So is there a command to believe? Do you have to believe in God? It doesn't seem that way. Nowhere in the Bible, nowhere in the Bible does it condemn atheism. It condemns idolatry, but it doesn't condemn atheism. Nowhere does it say you must not believe in no God. Perhaps that is because the Bible knows that everyone believes in a God. It may not be the God of Sinai, but everyone believes in some God. A man will bear beliefs, said Emerson, as a tree bears apples. You're going to believe in a God. The question is, what God will you believe in? The gods we worship, wrote Emerson, write their names on our faces. Be sure of that. And we will worship something. Have no doubt of that either. We may think our tribute is paid in secret, in the dark recesses of the heart, but it will out. Be careful about what we're worshiping, for what we are worshiping is what we are becoming. It doesn't have to command you to believe in something, because it knows you will believe in something, in yourself, in your country, in your money, in your business, in your family, in something you will put ultimate concern. That's what you'll think about all day. That's what you'll care about, and that's what you will become. I'm the Lord your God is in this way not a commandment but a warning. You have a choice. You don't have to believe that I'm the Lord your God. But know that all the things that follow, all the commandments, all the stories, all the admonitions, all the hope, they all depend on that belief. So you can believe in other things and not violate the commandment, but whatever first step you take, leads you on the road. And this first saying will take you down the road of the rest of the Bible, so you should know that it is not so much a commandment as it is a presupposition, a foundation. But understand also that it doesn't say I'm God. It says, I'm God who brought you out of Egypt. In other words, you don't have to have an abstract, eyes closed, detached belief. What you have to do is look for God in the world. You have to search for traces of the divine in what happens in history, in nature. That's what we're searching for. It's not that you sit alone in a room and all of a sudden you have an experience of God, but you see God in others, in worship, in goodness, sometimes in tragedy. God is a God of flashes and traces. A child went off to the Magid of Mezrich, the great Hasidic leader, to study, and when he came home, his father said to him, "What did you learn there?" And he said, "I learned to know that there was a God." And he said, "You could have learned that at home. I could have told you that." And he said, "No, at home I learned to believe there was a God. There I learned to know there was a God." He was so palpable. It so directed the everyday activities of everyone in that community that I felt it and I knew it. That I saw it in their pain and in their joy and in their study and in their prayer. In their losses and in their triumphs. And if you look at the Aseret HaDivarim this way, and you don't think of them as the Ten Commandments, but the Ten Sayings, then it also allows you to retranslate or re-understand the most problematic of the commandments, which is the last, Lo Tachmod, thou shalt not covet. Because how do you not want things that you don't have? And the Bible, which legislates behavior but almost never legislates emotion, all of a sudden, after saying, don't murder, don't steal, it comes to do not covet. And if it's a commandment, it makes no sense. Because we covet 100 times a day, 1,000 times a day. I wish I could speak foreign languages. Everyone wants something. But let's say it's not a commandment. Let us say, along with one interpreter, that it's a promise. That if you see God in everything, and God saturates your life and you live a good life, and you don't take those first steps down the wrong road, then you will have everything you need. Not that everything will be perfect. Not that you won't have gaps and lacks and flaws in your life, but you won't covet the way you covet when you think, if only I had that, everything would be okay. If only I had this, the world would be perfect. That illusion that one more thing will make you happy, it's not true. And all you need to find out it's not true is to get that one more thing. It's a promise. If you look for God in the world, if you search, if you feel, if you live decently and kindly, then ultimately you will discover that everything important is yours. That's the gift of those commandments that are incised on the two sides of the Aron Kodesh, of the Ark. They are a framework of life, each of them filled and rich with meaning, but all of them predicated on the idea that we are not alone in this world, that we are children of God, and that the world, no matter how long we get to be in it, will give us what we most need, which is a sense of promise, a certainty that we are not alone, the love of those whom we love truly, that's why, at the very end, we are told that if you live by these things, you will live a life that will fulfill the demands, perhaps not of your wallet or of your ambition, but of your soul. Aseret HaDevarim, 10 sayings to guide your life and enrich your soul. Shabbat Shalom.